Hi, everybody, and thank you for joining us for the Preceptor Podcast. I'm Sarah, and today I'm really excited to be interviewing one of our students here at Manchester, Lena. Lena, would you like to introduce yourself?
Yeah, sure. So my name is Lena Gayev. I am a P4 student, and I am a student at Manchester University and currently doing a rotation in the drug information. After graduation, I am interested in doing a residency, and I am particularly interested in infectious diseases.
Perfect. And so, knowing that interest, Lena is here to talk to us a little bit about some new studies that came out about sepsis. So before we get into the study, though, just to start us off, why is it important to talk about timing of interventions in sepsis?
Timing of sepsis is important because when you just have sepsis alone, if you wait so long to treat that sepsis, it could progress to a septic shock pretty quickly. And so with sepsis alone, you have a decent time to prevent it from becoming a septic shock. Now, when a patient is already in a septic shock territory, they become hypotensive, their organs are not getting blood, hence oxygen. And so the organs get to the point where they start to kind of shut down. And so that's why we want to do everything in a timely manner for these people to prevent them from getting into that septic shock.
So let's talk a little bit about this article specifically. And this was published back in January of 2022 in The Lancet. And it was called The Impact of 1 Hour and 3 Hour Sepsis Time Bundles on Patient Outcomes and Microbial Use. And then it says, a before and after cohort study. So could you please provide us with some of the basics of the study? For example, like what were the interventions? Did you feel like the methods were sound, kind of, etc.?
Yeah. So as you mentioned, this is a cohort study. And so it was looking to evaluate the efficacy of 1 hour and 3 hour bundle implementation for sepsis and septic shock patients. And that was done across 14 public hospital emergency departments in Australia. And so what they did is that they evaluated outcomes before, so at baseline and post-bundle intervention of something called a breakthrough series collaborative. Now, this is basically a protocol that hospital implemented, and they had trained staff, and they basically said that anyone who comes in with a confirmed sepsis to do a 3 hour bundle, and if someone had a septic shock, they would do a 1 hour bundle. And so after all these bundles, they checked on if the patient's outcomes improved. Now, for the interventions, it basically consisted of a sepsis screening tool and a treatment bundle plus IV fluids. So what they did is that they evaluated plasma lactate, they collected 2 sets of blood cultures, they administered broad spectrum antibiotics within 3 hours for septic patients, and antibiotics plus IV fluids within 1 hour for those with septic shock. Some people that they included in the study had to have either signs and symptoms that suggested an infection or signs of clinical deterioration, patients with positive blood cultures, and they also included patients with an ICD-10 diagnosis, ICD-10 coded diagnosis of sepsis. Outcomes that they looked at for this study were in-hospital mortality, the proportion of patients that required an ICU admission, and a combined in-hospital and 30-day post-hospital discharge mortality, and lastly, a length of an ICU stay. So methods-wise, so with this being a cohort study, it doesn't really work well when there is some sort of intervention. And in this study, they had an intervention because they were giving antibiotics and IV fluids. And in this case, there's no control group that accounts for any confounding variables. I think that what would be best would be a randomized control trial to decrease any possible confounding variables.
So I agree, like the randomized controlled is definitely our gold standard, but it would be a hard study to do a little bit with the randomized control. Mm-hmm. So we can kind of see why they picked this cohort study. Mm-hmm. So what did you think, what did the study find? What did they say their outcomes were?
So before talking about the findings, I think it's also important to note that there were three groups with outcomes. So they had an all sepsis group, which is sepsis. So it was composed of shock and non-shock patients. The second group is septic shock only, and the third group is sepsis only without shock. For the findings, for the first one, we said one of the outcomes was ICU admissions, and these were significantly reduced in the post-intervention phase in patients who had sepsis alone and sepsis overall. So that's the group that included both septic patients and septic shock patients. However, they didn't find a statistically significant difference when they just evaluated the septic shock alone. And the reason for that discrepancy is probably because septic shock patients are already sicker at baseline, and they're already more likely to need an ICU admission anyway, even if we have better interventions for them. So having any sort of intervention will slow down that process, but not necessarily prevent it. For the other outcome, the mortality outcome, it was only statistically significant for patients with sepsis overall. Again, that was sepsis plus shock group, and patients who had a septic shock only, which also in this case, it makes sense why it wouldn't reduce ICU for septic patients, because as we said, patients with septic shock are already sicker, so you're preventing mortality at that point. So you're not preventing them from going to the ICU, but you're preventing them, these patients, from dying. And so for the pre- and post-intervention, at day 30, survival rates increased from 65 to 80%. Now for all the other outcomes that I mentioned earlier, they found no differences for both days that patients stayed in the ICU and number of days that patients stayed in the hospital outside the ICU.
So how do you feel about these findings?
I think that it's amazing to see that mortality was reduced in this case, but I think it's also exciting to find ways to reduce like throwing treatments and intensive interventions made at patients. So putting patients through a lot of therapies isn't always therapeutic, so it's not always good for the patients. And I think like with this study, it's exciting to see that ICU admissions reduced, because that means so many more things, like I would be less psychiatric burden on the patient, less stress for their families, less stress for hospital workers, and more resources can be utilized for patients who need the same interventions for other reasons. And also that would mean more hospital beds opening up.
I think that's a really good point. And I think sometimes maybe I don't want to say we underplay that, because we think about ICU admissions and the cost, but there's also like all these indirect costs. You talked about the psychiatric burden of mm-hmm. ICU stays, and those indirect costs, I think sometimes we underplay. So I think that's a really good point to point out. And then also, you know, for families, what does that mm-hmm. mean for them, and nursing burden and things. So I think that's a really good point. Thank you for bringing that up. So as we think about what the study is going to mean in the future, should pharmacists be changing their practices at all? And I know this is pretty much a hospital pharmacist kind of issue that they're going to be experiencing, but as you think about hospital pharmacists, should they be changing their practices at all? Should they be looking at protocols they have at their hospital?
Yeah, of course. I think that based on this study, as you mentioned, this would be more for a hospital setting pharmacist. And so for someone like an emergency department pharmacist, I think that they have a huge role in this, because they'd have to be very proactive about it. And so if they see a patient in the emergency department, a big intervention would be to, you know, get these IV fluids going and antibiotics quickly, because as we mentioned earlier, that timing for these patients is really important to avoid devastating outcomes such as septic shock and mortality.
Is there anything else that our listeners should know based on, you know, what you've read about this or other things that you read as you were preparing to talk to us about this study?
I think that we already mentioned everything that needed to be mentioned, but I think that this article was really important, and of course it can help us avoid terrible outcomes such as mortality. And so I think that this helps us as pharmacists to just become more proactive about it and keep an eye on these patients.
Well, this has been super helpful. Thank you so much, Lena, for being with us and for raising the awareness about this mortality-driven topic, and hopefully we can help save some people's lives with this simple discussion.
No problem.